Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. All right, Scott, here we are again, another episode, and this time we have another guest on. We have Omar Shaheen from Microsoft. We actually had one set up with Omar at Ignite, Ignite's coming at the SharePoint conference, and schedules got crazy, and it ended up not working out, but he was gracious enough to reschedule and jump back on with us today, so we're all back at home about a month after the SharePoint conference, settled back in. So just a little bit about Shaheen. He runs product for OneDrive, SharePoint Consumer and Business Services, and Office 365. Looks like has worked on OneDrive for a long time, been at Microsoft since 2004?
1999.
Oh, 99. I was going off of LinkedIn, and LinkedIn said like 2004 you started with Hotmail. So
yeah,
you've been there a long time, and I saw SkyDrive on there, which brought back memories. So yeah, why don't you just start off, tell us a little bit about you, what you've done, kind of your history at Microsoft, and any other interesting tidbits you may want to throw in about who you are, what you do.
Sure. So thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure and to be here and chat with you guys. So yeah, I joined Microsoft right out of college. I did not take a traditional path to getting to Microsoft. I was not a CS major. I actually was a biology major. Grew up on the East Coast, was a big computer nerd, but I was a huge Apple fanboy growing up as a kid, and found myself at Microsoft because Microsoft at the time, 98, 99, was actually the largest Mac developer outside of Apple. And I joined in the Bay Area and spent 10 years down in the Bay Area. I worked on a bunch of products on the Mac. One is a product that folks may not remember anymore called Entourage. Entourage was the Mac version of Outlook. And so I spent a good chunk of my career working on email. And then I went to work on Hotmail, so even more email, and this time in the cloud. Moved up to Sunny Redmond in 2009. At the time, I was part of Windows Live. That's where SkyDrive was essentially born. I worked for a year or two on the contacts platform in Windows. And I had an opportunity to go work on this small little team called the SkyDrive team. And that's where, right around 2010, we sort of hatched this plan to put a lot of weight and energy behind this idea of building a consumer cloud service for files and content and photos. And, we sort of had a two-year vision, maybe took us 4 to 6 years to realize it, but that vision was all about having cross-platform applications on iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, that made it easy for you to sync and share your files. It was interesting times building an iOS and Android app in the Windows division. You know, not the easiest place in the world to get a lot of support for that, but we sort of persevered in making it clear that the value of getting your files in SkyDrive was getting to it from all your devices. And so while Microsoft builds and sells devices, we also felt that was important to have anywhere access really truly meet the customer where they were. A couple years later, Microsoft made this big push to combine consumer and commercial services. So for a long period of time at Microsoft, there were like separate people working on the consumer versions of things and the commercial versions of things. You had, you know, the Exchange team working on commercial email, and you had the Hotmail team, now Outlook.com, working on consumer mail. That was true across a number of products, Skype, Outlook and Exchange, SharePoint and OneDrive. And so we brought together the OneDrive and SharePoint team, and I've been in the team ever since. So the teams came together about 4 years ago, and we've made small but meaningful steps in sort of bringing together our experiences into one and investing a lot in capabilities that our customers have asked for, and helping them move their data to the cloud and making their experiences of using data in the cloud, collaborating, sharing, really great, world-class. And then about a year ago, I had the pleasure of stepping into a new role, which is sort of combined program management for both OneDrive and SharePoint. And so I've used SharePoint as an end user for almost 2 decades at Microsoft. And this was a neat opportunity to actually lead the product team for both of those combined products. It's been awesome. The team's great. Customers are awesome. We get a lot of great feedback. We have amazing partner community. And so I've had a great, great time in the last year just kind of getting to participate in product evolution across what amounts to a really, really diverse, impactful platform at Microsoft and the customers have been using for almost 2 decades, along with sort of a born in the cloud product, which is OneDrive. And just seeing how those things evolve and getting great feedback and working on them together.
All right. Very cool. And I did gather, like I went and checked out Twitter and your blog, and I did gather that you, while you work at Microsoft, you do enjoy your Apple products. It looks like you have a lot of them. And I know that's one thing from my perspective is it feels like you said, back when in the Entourage days and some of those other days, Microsoft was a huge Apple developer. And then it felt like there was a little bit of a period there where they kind of weren't focusing as much on Apple, focusing really just on getting everything running on Windows Mobile and all of that. And I feel like in the last 3 or 4 years, again, it's kind of switched back to, hey, we really want all of our stuff working on Apple, on Android, all of those. It's kind of been cool from my perspective to see kind of that renewed push to really almost become a really, do a lot of Apple development and keep all of those products working on all kinds of devices now.
Yeah, it's been interesting. When I joined, the Mac team was a small little island in the company, and there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm beyond our own team for what we were doing. That's changed a lot. And I think fundamentally it changed because, you know, Satya has been really big about developing empathy for customers and being really curious about what customers need. At the end of the day, the world is made up of lots of diverse products, and they, you know, our customers, both consumers and enterprise customers, they've made a diverse set of choices about what they want to use in their environments. And at the end of the day, a lot of companies, a lot of people like using products from Apple and Samsung. And that sort of forced us to really think about developing solutions that meet you where you're using, you know, where you're using and enjoying the experience. And so there's a big emphasis today. Having a great web experience, having a great Mac experience, iOS and Android. You know, Microsoft has thousands of developers that work on these cross-platform experiences and have invested in engineering efficiencies that really allow us to make it easier to bring features to all of our platforms at the same time. And that's been a big change. It used to be that we had like a code base for Windows and a code base for each unique platform. And so it's both been investment in engineering, but also investment in customer empathy and customer success that's kind of caused that change to occur.
That's awesome. And then from a program management standpoint, really you're looking at balancing APIs and access to those APIs. How do you prioritize everything in there between, like you said, there's the engineering side of the world where we've actually got to build it, and that might be APIs and building out the back end. And then there's building out the front end, and which one gets features first, when do they come into play, and how do they all align? I imagine there's a little bit of a kind of a teeter-totter just trying to balance itself out there to get everything to line up the right way.
Yeah, and frankly, that's where we spend a lot of our time, is on the sort of prioritization. You know, in our team, so you may be familiar, but Microsoft used to have these very long sort of planning and release cycles. They were about 3 years, and that was true for both Office and Windows. And that was really hard to get right. You know, it turns out the most powerful thing to get something right is, one, a tight engineering loop where you have a high velocity, meaning you can actually deliver code on a frequent basis, and then two, a great feedback loop from your customers. Because fundamentally, you learn from your customers about what they like, dislike, use, don't use. And so we sort of moved to a model now that's, I'd say, more of an annual planning cycle. We sort of pause once a year to really think maybe 1 to 3 year out and sort of setting goals and vision. And then we refine the backlogs, you know, the places we organize the list of things and the order in which we want to do them. And then our team works on a quarterly rhythm where every quarter we take a look at what we got done, and we take a look at sort of what's the next chunk of work we have to do. And we use customer insight and validation, partner requests, as a way to refine that list. And so we, you know, as an engineering team, we spend lots of time trying to have a good balance between making forward progress without a lot of change and disruption, but also being very flexible in how we adapt and adjust based on feedback from partners and customers and end users.
Yeah, and it seems like even from getting a lot of that feedback now, it's been fun to see even user voice and how, again, from an outside person, it feels like you guys are listening a lot more to the user voice, paying attention to that. And now with all the online stuff, actually being able to deliver on that faster because you are doing more of those, the shorter review cycles. It's not, hey, we have all these requests and we have to wait 3 years for the next version. So it's fun, even from the outside, seeing just the speed at which you guys are able to iterate and roll out new features and take that feedback and incorporate it into everything you're doing from that program management side of things.
Yeah, it's, you know, user voice is a great platform, and it's, you know, interesting. The story behind at least the OneDrive user voice is kind of, not many people know it, but there was a lot of tension, I'd say 4 or 5 years ago, about sort of how public we wanted to be about what we were doing. There was a lot of, the culture at Microsoft was sort of to be maybe a little bit secretive or maybe opaque about what we were doing and projecting, you know, yes or no, these are things we're doing. And what happened one day was one of our customers actually was pretty frustrated with the lack of progress over some things in OneDrive. And he went and just created the site and populated it with a bunch of feature requests. And then a sort of community instantly popped up and started voting on things. And that sort of catalyzed us into, geez, like we sort of are being called to the mat now, and we sort of have to demonstrate some level of accountability here, given we have a community. And we took over the site. He handed it off to us. We had a really great sort of transition over to us. And since then, we've tried to, you know, we feel that transparency is an important part of our internal culture in our team, but also an important part of our culture with our customers. It's hard to be transparent. You know, lots of product teams have tried user voice, and in the end, you kind of have to have some principles and rules about what you're going to acknowledge and how you're going to acknowledge it, because it can also be really frustrating if people vote on a lot of, you know, we get a lot of votes on something, but we're not going to invest in that feature either now or later. And so, you know, saying no is actually quite hard, but you sort of have to do it when you're signaling that this is, you know, thank you for the feedback. This isn't something we're going to do. We know it's disappointing for you to hear that, but we'd rather that you know where we stand, and that might change in the future. But here are all the things we are doing. So it's sort of a balance of projecting enough clarity that people feel confident that we're investing in the right set of things, but that we have finite resources at the end of the day. And we're not going to be 100% transparent, because there's things we work on that are sort of confidential for some period of time. So it's a tough balance, but I think it's important and healthy for us to have that conversation. We, you know, Twitter is an interesting place too, where we do get a lot of feedback and questions as well. And Twitter's turned into a pretty neat platform for products teams and products in general, and companies to interact with enthusiasts. You tend to see a lot of active folks in Twitter that are sort of enthusiasts interacting with different brands. And there's a bunch of other teams at Microsoft that use user voice in similar ways. SharePoint has a user voice site as well. It doesn't get quite the amount of traffic, given that OneDrive is like a consumer product, tends to get a lot more traffic in that respect. But it is a place that the team spends time thinking about how are we addressing the needs that are expressed in these sites.
Yeah. Definitely. And we have also seen how you can still maintain some of that secrecy at the SharePoint conference, especially when you surprised everybody with SharePoint Spaces, which it sounds like you guys have been working on for about 18 months before the conference and managed to not leak out at all before the conference.
Yeah. It's we're really happy that it did not leak out before the conference. We, you know, there are projects at Microsoft that a term that gets used a lot is called tenting. Like, are you tented? Meaning, are you in the tent or are you outside the tent? We did not follow a super rigid confidentiality process. We made a best effort attempt, because, you know, the amount of confidentiality and enforcement you have, it can sometimes preclude the relevant amount of collaboration necessary across the company to do something. And this was a project that actually required cross-team partnership, but everybody knew it was a secret and everybody knew it was confidential. And I think the team did a really great job of respecting that, because we really did want to surprise in a good way. And we felt like we had an exciting idea. And we had a pretty small investment initially to go and validate the concepts and ideas. And we met with a lot of customers, which we didn't talk too much about at the SharePoint conference, but we interviewed a lot of customers at different companies to figure out if this was an interesting idea to pursue. And you'd be surprised at how skeptical, I mean, I think for a lot of people, this seems like an obvious thing. Maybe some people are still skeptical, but our own team, including Jeff, was pretty skeptical, you know, early on that we would actually get pretty far along in the validation process. And so every opportunity we had to try and validate was, we got really great feedback. And so it sort of energized us to keep going.
Yeah, so it's been out. You announced it at the SharePoint conference. So it's been out about a month now. And again, at the SharePoint conference, everybody was still trying to soak it in, try to absorb it, think of different use cases. Have you guys seen much reaction, gotten much feedback kind of over the last month as people have really had a chance to digest it a little bit more, think about it, think about various use cases and that type of stuff? Have you guys had any of those types of reactions? What have they been over the last month?
Yeah, great question. So we had a private preview sign-up list that we published at the conference. And there's been a huge amount of interest. I think we are frankly blown away by the diversity of interest, the scenarios people have in mind, and the amount of like mixed reality work that, you know, is already happening in pockets. Some companies are already dabbling with 3D models, mixed reality, 360 videos. And so for sure, there's a lot of interest. And with any new platform and any new scenario, you know, you sort of have to recognize that you're never going to quite figure out how these things are going to get used until you ship them. And the community, developer community, has an opportunity to create and build on your platform. And there's sort of, there are lots and lots of great examples of this. My favorite, of course, is like mobile apps. And, you know, you look at the iPhone and its genesis over time. And, you know, Apple had a point of view on what was going to ship with the phone. Then they built the App Store. And then developers had an opportunity over, you know, 7 or 8 years to really push the envelope, while Apple also built in extended capabilities. And if you remember, a lot of the apps that shipped in the first round, were a lot of them were silly and don't really exist anymore. But there's a cycle you go through where we have some amount of the idea ourselves, but really what's going to be interesting is what we haven't figured out and what people will figure out building on the platform. And that's the thing I think we're most excited about, is, you know, this idea of like democratizing the ability to create mixed reality spaces, which is something very difficult today. And where SharePoint, I think, has really been valuable over the last 2 decades is by making hard things simple. And those hard things being things like building websites, building an intranet, and building compelling out-of-box experiences. And this is another sort of chapter in that, you know, history, I think.
Yeah. So is that preview still open? If other people hearing this still want to go sign up for it, have you closed it off? Is there a link that we can put in the show notes for people to go to if they want to sign up for that preview?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I can certainly find out. Dan Holm, who heads our marketing team in SharePoint, is the person who's been managing that. And I can certainly follow up and get you guys a link if it's still open for sign up to include in the show notes.
Okay. So are you able to, I know you talked about, you've interviewed some customers, you have some people coming into the preview with ideas. You talked about at the conference, the whole idea of onboarding. Are you able to talk about even some of those other clients maybe you've talked to or other use cases that have surfaced since the SharePoint conference about maybe different ways people are looking to use this or leverage it? Or is that still all kind of confidential? And we'll leave that one up to you on how much you can actually talk about.
Well, I can talk about the scenarios that I think have more broad appeal. And I don't think those have changed. It's more that we've seen broader interest around adopting some of those scenarios. But one of them is around essentially like new employee experiences and onboarding and creating like a higher level of engagement for people that are joining companies. A lot of big companies invest a lot in sort of what the experience is like before you join, what the experience is like the day of, and what the experience is like over the course of time. A lot of employees are remote, and so creating deeper and richer experiences for them is something that this provides a great opportunity for. There's a lot of interest in learning. One of the pieces of research and feedback we have is that headsets like VR, those experiences where you put them on, they sort of immerse you in a way that is maybe less, has left fewer distractions. And so the ability to sort of focus on a single task, and that could be a learning experience or a training experience, is something really compelling. There's a lot of companies that have what we call Microsoft first line workers, people who work in factories or retail where they're maybe not using a computer for most of their day, but need information and training is an interesting, you know, area to develop on top of for spaces. So those things, I'd say there's subtle nuances in how each customer thinks about that. And that's information that's really valuable in developing a stronger point of view on what the right sort of out-of-box templates and experiences are so people can create those. 360 video is something that I think resonated where, you know, the ease of capture now is you can go on Amazon and buy a number of different devices that do 360 capture. And it's a really cool experience to actually replay one of those things. But it's a little underwhelming when you do it in a 2D form factor, like on a phone or a web browser. And so there are lots of companies that sort of have this opportunity to capture experiences in 360 and give people a better opportunity to view those things. So those are some of the things that have come up. And then there are a lot of customers that have 3D content, medical device companies, part manufacturers, companies that make cars and automobiles, want to have better experiences to engage that content, which is today not something you can really do well through a web browser. So you know, we've just, I think, gotten more, it's validated that some of these things, ideas we had, are actually worth developing more deeply and getting more specific feedback on.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that where, as you brought up, like car manufacturers, where they have a whole bunch of parts, where now instead of maybe looking at a 3D drawing or some of the CAD drawings or some of those, again, a flat document to represent a physical object, now you could actually place 3D models right in a SharePoint space and let them look at the object from all the angles, see it all, and give them a whole different experience of being able to see some of those 3D models for like car parts or a whole bunch of inventory that they may have for their company.
Yep. Data visualization is another interesting one that people have been pretty curious about, which is it easier to like understand and analyze data when you can walk around a Power BI chart or walk around a, you know, Visio rendering of a factory floor and that type of thing?
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm excited as you guys keep going forward with it once it gets released out there so we can play with it to see what it looks like.
Yeah, I think it'll be a long journey too. And that's one of the things that I think it's always tricky to time these things with the technology curve of adoption. If you think back 10 years, like look at the phone world then and now, and we've come a long way. And so I think there's going to be a similar technology adoption curve that is a parallel thing happening alongside the software evolution. And that's just something that I think there'll be more learning from failures along the way types of transitions.
There's going to be all that balance for that skeuomorphism. You know, we went through rich Corinthian leather on our iPhones and we'll go through it with our Excel documents too.
Yeah, it's sort of the design evolution of like everything is flat and then rounded corners and square corner. Like design evolution is a thing that happens along the way as well. It's always interesting to go back and look at our old UI we were so used to.
Very cool. So you've got experiences like that in SharePoint and OneDrive and everything else. And some you certainly own the future for from a program side. How do you align with other teams as well? So I think the space that Ben and I play in, we see a lot of the new world where it's not necessarily that the feature's not there. Maybe it's locked behind an entitlement or it's a licensing feature or a construct that sits on that side. And, you know, I want to do this thing in SharePoint that would be really cool, like SharePoint Spaces, but I really want my people to be secure at the same time. So they need like MFA, but that's an Azure AD thing and a licensing thing. How do you align with teams across there just to make sure that everything comes together really nicely from a story side? Do you have to go back and kind of do wider alignments with Microsoft 365 and that push, or where does that all come in?
That's a really great question. The program manager job at Microsoft is heavy on two things. One, understanding as much as possible about each team's business strategy and context, as well as partnering around scenarios together. And so getting better at end-to-end experiences, we strive to, you know, every company has organizational boundaries. Teams are organized to be a certain size because they're efficient that way. You know, Amazon has this two pizza box rule, which some people have heard about, which is you want teams to be about as big as what you can put in a room and consume two pizzas. We don't have strict guidelines, but any organization we create, fundamentally, people in those organizations have to work across teams so that when customers deploy or buy or use products, they don't experience these sort of gaps, which is something program management really aspires to minimize, reduce, eliminate as much as possible. And so that means we, when it comes to things like how we package our software and what capabilities exist when we provide guidance to customers about how to protect their data, we do have to have an understanding of what's available for everyone, what costs extra, the different tiering that we have across our commercial portfolio is an important thing for people to have familiarity with. There's separate sets of people at Microsoft that make decisions about how best to package software so there's clear delineation of value. You know, so for example, between E1, Enterprise 1 SKU, and Enterprise 3 SKU, one of the differences is client applications, you know, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, Win32 and Mac. Between E3 and E5, there's a lot of capability around telephony, voice, security, compliance, auditing, reporting. And then Azure itself has a set of services, authentication, conditional access, that are also similarly tiered and packaged, you know, into and those types of things. So, you know, we have a pretty big PM team and they partner really closely with those folks. And so they also partner with our marketing team. And so when we talk to customers, we really try and make sure we have a clear understanding of what's part of the base offering and what's not part of that base offering. But a lot of our big customers, you know, they sort of, in many cases, will pay for and purchase the premium, most premium SKUs because they tend to use across their entire organization a lot of those capabilities, especially the security conscious companies, you know, regulated industries, banks, healthcare tend to have more needs in those spaces. And we do sort of have we invest across both breadth, but also depth in terms of experience and scenario for those customers.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So as you go in, kind of in that same vein too, you get a lot of these certain services too in Office 365 that even span teams. So I know I talk to clients all the time and a lot of clients are used to, we have a SharePoint team, we have an Exchange team, maybe we have a Skype for Business team. There doesn't have to be a lot of communication between them. They're kind of all siloed. As you start getting into Office 365, I talked to a lot of clients and I'm like, Microsoft has managed to integrate these together in a way that I have never seen anybody successfully accomplish in their own on-premises environment. But then you get certain things like data loss protection or some of the new things with labels and label policies and like the search and investigation with the unified audit log, where those services, they touch everything because in the unified audit log, you're pulling stuff in from OneDrive, from SharePoint, from Exchange. How do some of those come about? Does it tend to be one team that does it and all the other teams start adopting it? Is there some of these that are made at a high level and it's just said, okay, all of you guys, this is what we're going to do. You have to integrate all your products with this one Office 365 service. How does some of that all work and come together?
That's a great question and a really interesting space. It's a mix. It's really a mix of a lot of things. So we do have centralized teams that say own the core platform and administrative UI and reporting, say, and then we have teams that are responsible for plugging into those services so that administrators can query across, say, Exchange and SharePoint and understand, you know, what did this user do? If you get, you know, subpoenaed for data and you have to do discovery, you know, doing e-discovery across all the products is critically important. Now, these products all get developed independently. And so it's a challenge because at times, at any point in time, you might end up with what is incomplete experience for the customer, meaning Teams is a relatively new product. They haven't had as much time to mature as, say, SharePoint and Exchange. And you have to balance investing in all of the administrative capabilities and tools up front at the expense of maybe driving user engagement and user love, or you could invest all in that space but still have, we, you know, have areas that are not incomplete around some of the administrative capabilities. And so, you know, it's a mix and it's a balance. In some cases, some teams take points for new scenarios. So in my case, my team in SharePoint, we've sort of taken point on some of the labeling policy in conversations. It doesn't mean that the central teams are also leading that with us, but we try and create these V teams, virtual teams inside of our groups that span multiple product teams. We've got a number of different examples of that. My team also leads the sharing coherence team at Microsoft, meaning we're on point, accountable, and do a lot of work to create a simple and common unified sharing experience. And then we work across all the product teams at Microsoft to deliver that, which is very different than how we used to do things a couple years ago. And you're right to point out that the cloud has sort of mandated that we do these types of things, because in the past we package everything up and the world was a little bit different. Whereas today these things tend to evolve more quickly and you tend to experience them more easily across a number of products. So we have lots of tracks: search, sharing, sign-in, policy classification, and people. And so you can see signs of some of that today. If you use Outlook on your phone and you use Outlook on the Mac and you use SharePoint and you click on a person, you get a pretty consistent card called a people card that expresses a common UI and capability that's service delivered. That's such an example. We have many, many more of those that are in the pipeline to produce, I think, better and better experiences that really cross all of our products, so that you don't end up having, you're just trying to transition from that world of on-premise maybe where you had a SharePoint administrator who knew, understood SharePoint, and Exchange administrator understood Exchange. They didn't really have to talk to each other that much. And these days, it's a lot harder to not talk to each other because these experiences are way more integrated. And that sort of mandates that we build administrative capabilities and role support that also evolves with the changing ways in which companies manage, say, collaboration or teamwork as opposed to SharePoint and Exchange.
Very cool. It's fun to see. I'm having a fun time watching it, keeping up with all of it, trying to stay up on the news and keep updated. So one last question. Obviously, Spaces was the big deal at the SharePoint conference. What is your favorite announcement feature that you can talk about publicly that was announced that you're working on outside of Spaces?
It's funny you asked that, because the thing that got the most applause at the keynote was not Spaces. I don't know if you remember the thing that got the most applause, but it was the Lists experiences demo that Chris McNulty gave. And it's frankly not surprising, because Lists are these really incredible sort of multifaceted things that can be used to create a lot of efficiency in your day. And a lot of people use Lists. You know, millions and millions and millions of Lists exist in our service. They're used for so many business critical things. And I think those Lists have really, they're kind of overdue for a big upgrade. And so we talked about, you know, internally in the team, we talk about this as sort of the year of the List, because we've sort of modernized a big chunk of SharePoint already, and we're really excited to add a bunch of new column types to Lists, build better integrations with Excel. We obviously have Flow is a really key part of making, like, supercharging Lists, I guess. I have a number of Lists that run my team. You know, I have we have a SharePoint communication site that we use to publish internal news about product status every month. And so about 45 people write a post each month, and I have a List that tracks each area, each owner of the List, the due dates, and I have a Flow that sends a reminder 7 days, 3 days, 1 day, and then every day it's overdue to the individuals that own writing those reports. And I used to do that manually, and it would take me forever, and it was super frustrating, and I'd forget to do it, and then things wouldn't happen on time. So there are so many cool scenarios that I don't even think customers really know about yet. So I'm personally very excited about our opportunity to make Lists a powerful platform, both in SharePoint, but also in Teams, make it more accessible to people, bring Flow in as a really cool way to do almost unlimited things. Chris, I think, demoed, I don't know if he demoed this, but we practiced this, our demos got kind of long, and one of the things we were going to show was the ability to say, take a bunch of tweets, pull them into a List, use Azure Cognitive Services to run sentiment analysis against those tweets, color code all that data using the column formatter and the row formatter, so that anyone could go to a List and just see, like, oh, for my product here, you know, or my company, here's all the stuff people are talking about without much work, you know, by basically taking a bunch of Legos, putting them together. You've now built this really powerful business capability, which can be used to drive insights about your product or team. And so that's something that, like, I think is amazing, you know, to do out of box without any programming skills, just based off of these core building blocks. And I think our community in general loves that kind of stuff, because it's sort of this amazing opportunity to talk to your customers about what their needs are and craft very simple ways to solve those things without building a lot of custom tools. So that's what I'm very excited about. I'm sort of a list power user myself, and so I'm really eager to start playing around with those features.
Very cool. I am too. I really enjoyed that announcement too. Well, thanks, Omar. It was a pleasure having you on. Very interesting to chat with you about some of those things. So thanks for taking the time and joining us for a little bit here to fill us in on some of that information.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Go enjoy the rest of your Friday, your weekend. And yeah, hopefully we'll see you at Ignite and have a whole bunch more stuff to talk about in another 3 months or so after Ignite.
Definitely look forward to that.
All right. Thanks, Omar.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.